Abortion and the right for a woman to get one is never far from the news in America. It's very much in the news of late with the retirement of the swing vote on the U.S. Supreme Court, Anthony Kennedy, and the nomination of conservative Judge Brett Kavanaugh to replace him. That could lead to a Supreme Court with a majority of votes to overturn or curtail abortion rights under the Roe v. Wade ruling of 1973. Everyone with an interest in abortion, pro or con, is watching closely. That includes NARAL Pro-Choice Oregon. NARAL used to stand for the National Abortion Rights Action League. The group is keeping an eye on the Supreme Court moves and on a ballot measure on abortion funding that might be in front of Oregon voters in November. Grayson Dempsey is the executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Oregon and our guest on The Exchange. Grayson, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you so much for having me.
So with the retirement of Justice Kennedy first, I mean, within NARAL in Oregon and elsewhere, was there a real flurry of statements and person-to-person contacts?
Yeah, I mean, here in Oregon, we're really lucky that we have the leadership of Senators Wyden and Merkley, who are very much champions of reproductive rights and have committed to voting against any Supreme Court nominee who would be seeking to overturn Roe versus Wade. But I think that with this, possible nomination, I think it really did raise the stakes in Oregon in terms of people's understanding of what would happen to us in what is widely known as the most pro-choice state in the nation. So we hosted a press conference with Senator Merkley the week that Justice Kennedy retired. We've been talking to the governor, we've been talking to our legislative champions. So I know that this story is really front and center for a lot of people. And I think that the question about how it impacts us as Oregonians is really central to a lot of people's concerns.
Your own release on June 27 speaks of dire immediate danger to the right to access legal abortion. This is in the wake of the Kennedy announcement. Immediate, though?
You know, I think that the immediacy of the threat to abortion can really be felt even in the Supreme Court decisions that have happened as of late. So the same week that Justice Kennedy announced his retirement, the Supreme Court also decided on a case called NIFLA versus Becerra, which was a case that came out of California and ultimately was decided in favor of crisis pregnancy centers that are now allowed to essentially masquerade as legitimate medical facilities. So I think that the threat really does feel immediate. I mean, certainly it's not that the day that a new Supreme Court justice would be appointed that Roe v. Wade would be overturned. Of course, you know, cases need to work their way through courts. But we also know that the anti-abortion movement has been laying the groundwork for a case that would overturn Roe v. Wade for many, many years now. So those cases are already in the lower courts and certainly moving through and being heard by a court that had a conservative juggernaut that could potentially happen with Trump having these two Supreme Court nominations would be really, I think, the most dire threat that we've seen to abortion rights in a generation.
With the cases that are brought up with an intention of getting them ultimately to the Supreme Court, you mentioned the California case, and we do cover California, and I've talked about that particular ruling and the law that led to it, which became an argument about First Amendment rights in terms of free speech rather than a privacy sort of thing, which is where abortion has tended to dwell in the legal realm. I wonder if you see a major change in tactics there.
You know, that was a unique case, and certainly whether we're coming at this from a free speech or a privacy issue, it really, I think, circumvents the issue that access to abortion is a healthcare issue and a human rights issue. So I think that, frankly, the strategy from the anti-abortion movement has been about trying to continually chip away at this idea that abortion is healthcare, which is, what we're going to talk about with the ballot measure we could potentially be facing in November, but is also really trying to limit abortion in terms of creating things like we saw in Ohio with a bill that would ban abortion as soon as fetal heartbeat could be detected, or in Iowa with very, very extreme gestation limits, so abortion only being able to be legal up to 6 weeks. So there may be a strategy that's around trying to switch from privacy to free speech, but what I really see is really just trying to limit abortion to a place where even if it wasn't completely illegal, it would be essentially inaccessible for most women who need the service.
Grayson Dempsey, is the greater burden on people who do favor abortion rights? Because you talk in terms of abortion as health care, you talk about it in terms of human rights, and the people who don't want abortion can talk in terms of babies.
Mm-hmm. So is the question that those of us who favor abortion rights, is the greater burden on us to sort of prove why that's a viable position? Is that my understanding?
It's partly the terminology. It seems like there's a greater burden, there's a more difficult case to make when you have to resort to say things like, you know, abortion is health care, as opposed to the people on the other side who can say, well, but, you know, this is killing babies. And the terminology that they use is very direct and very inflammatory.
Yeah. I mean, the other side certainly can use very inflammatory language and often does, and uses, I think, language that creates a shock factor for people. It's hard to argue with someone when they're talking about babies and that sort of thing. I actually think that the burden is on the other side, though. When we know that, frankly, the majority of Americans support abortion rights, 7 in 10 nationwide, and that's across red and blue states. But we also know that in their lifetime, 1 in 4 American women will have an abortion. And that doesn't, so the personal experience that people have with why they made the choice to seek abortion, and that, you know, including the amount of people that are touched by those decisions, including partners, including family members, I think people really get that this is a decision about when and if to have a child. And I think that most people understand that we can't live in a modern society where women are forced to carry pregnancies to term because of lack of access to abortion. So I think that even with the inflammatory language that the other side uses, I think that most people can see through that and say, you know, when I had an abortion, this was the decision, this was the reason I made that decision. Or when someone I love had an abortion, I know that it was because of XYZ reason. And I think that while most people understand, you know, the gravity of the decision to have an abortion, or all the reasons that someone might have an abortion, I think that really what people care about is making sure that women have access to safe and legal health care, because when they don't, we know what happens, which is women, will seek methods or procedures that are often unsafe and often fatal.
Grayson Dempsey is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Oregon, and we're talking about the world we live in at this moment, with a new Supreme Court justice potentially on the way to the right of where Anthony Kennedy was, and a ballot measure potentially coming to Oregon in November that we have yet to talk about. We will get to that, and you can join the conversation on the Exchange. Join us by phone at 800-838-3760, or send your thoughts via email to jx@jeffnet.org. Gavin talked specifically about Brett Kavanaugh, the choice to replace Anthony Kennedy, a choice by President Trump to fill that position on the Supreme Court. What are your thoughts about Brett Kavanaugh, and about what you expected, really?
You know, I think that when the Trump administration says that they have a goal of putting justices in place who will overturn Roe v. Wade, we should believe them. And so on multiple occasions, we know that Vice President Pence has said that is his goal, as he said things like to confine Roe v. Wade to the ash heap of history. We had Trump during his campaign saying that he thought it would be appropriate to punish women for seeking abortions. And so I think we should take very seriously the threat of this justice that they have appointed, who has made decisions in the past that have shown his anti-abortion stance. And I think we should really not take lightly the commitment that has been so openly stated to really overturning Roe v. Wade and criminalizing abortion in this country.
You mentioned an appearance with Senator Merkley right after the Kennedy retirement announcement, and you've called upon Oregon senators to stand up to the administration, but they are in a minority party, and it only takes 51 votes to get a person onto the Supreme Court now. Do they really have much they can do?
You know, I think that just like we saw with the debate about the Affordable Care Act, my hope is that the Democrats will stand united in blocking any nominee who would be a threat to Roe v. Wade, and that we can convince the pro-choice Republicans to do the same. So just like, you know, we saw again with the debate around the Affordable Care Act, I think that my hope is that by reaching out to some of the pro-choice Republicans, and certainly those, you know, are really centered on Maine and Alaska, but that we can have an impact in showing that Those senators don't want to be the final votes on nominating a justice who would be committed to criminalizing abortion.
So a lot of pressure then, a lot of weight on Susan Collins in Maine and Lisa Murkowski in Alaska. And I mean, is NARAL peppering both of them every day with stuff?
Yes, we have members across the country who are putting in calls, who are letting them know their feelings, and certainly focusing on their constituencies. Our national organization, NARAL Pro-Choice America, has launched ad campaigns in Maine and Alaska, really asking Senators Collins and Murkowski to do the right thing, as you know, as they have self-proclaimed, you know, pro-choice advocates. And so we are really, it is a lot of pressure, but I think that that's, we're in a time when it's really, these kinds of votes really boil down to one or two people on the other side standing with their conscience and standing up to their party.
Is that where the focus will be? Because I ask this because Senator Wyden visited just before Independence Day. And, you know, when I mentioned in the intro, as I just did, that there's not much Democrats can do with fewer than 50 votes to mobilize. He disagreed. He said, you know, if voters make their concerns very clear, that can make a difference in what happens. So is it a case of trying to make sure that lots of people contact the senators who you see as potentially flippable?
I think it's the case that a lot of people, I think certainly there's a lot people can do in terms of making their voice heard. I mean, I think it's obviously always most impactful when elected officials hear from their own constituents. But I think that the pressure of, by putting the pressure on by, you know, from people nationwide, I think we're really sending a message that, you know, this could be a legacy vote. This could be the kind of thing where if a justice gets appointed who overturns Roe v. Wade, I think that, there could be the feeling that if you were that, you know, that swing vote who allowed that justice onto the court, that your legacy could then be helping to criminalize abortion. I think people are really trying to make that message clear to the senators who would be receptive to it and make sure that they know that the nation is really watching and letting them know that our values are that, you know, the majority of us in America support access to legal abortion.
So a lot of people doing a lot of work at the moment, that is clear. Even so, Grayson, would it be something of a miracle if abortion is not just plain illegal somewhere in the country within the next 3 years?
You know, I'm glad you asked that because I do think that there's a lot of focus on, you know, what would happen if Roe v. Wade was overturned. And throughout my career, I've heard people say, well, if Roe v. Wade was overturned, I would take to the streets. And, you know, but the reality is that we are seeing access to legal abortion being gutted every single day. And I think that there's a few scenarios with this conservative Supreme Court that we have. One is that, you know, there could be a vote that would overturn Roe, and certainly that would, I think, it would be the most dramatic, but also sort of easily understandable by the general public. The other could be that we could essentially have legal access, you know, legal abortion in this country with a Supreme Court that claims that any barrier to accessing abortion was constitutional. And so I do think that there's a scenario, even if Roe wasn't overturned, I think what we're seeing already are states where there's one abortion clinic or no abortion clinics. We're seeing states where women have to jump through, you know, lots of bureaucratic hoops in order to get the services they need. We're seeing a lot of states where the cost of abortion makes it inaccessible to women because it's not covered by Medicaid or not able to be covered by private insurance. So I actually think the reality for a lot of women living today in America is that while abortion is legal, it may be inaccessible and out of reach based on both barriers and then the ability to finance and get to an abortion clinic.
Grayson Dempsey is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's the executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Oregon, with obviously a real stake in what's going on both in Washington, D.C. and here in Oregon about decisions that will lead to perhaps some curtailments on abortion, probably in other parts of the country. But you can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. And I say in other parts of the country because you've already established that Oregon is considered the most pro-choice state in the country. That would seemingly continue even if the state had the ability, under Roe versus Wade being overturned, for example, to outlaw or curtail it.
Yeah, I mean, we're incredibly lucky, again, that we have the kind of access that we do here in Oregon. We have pro-choice leadership at, you know, every level of government, making sure that we are protecting the right to reproductive health care. Last year, the legislature passed the Reproductive Health Equity Act, and it was signed by Governor Brown in August of 2017, which, among other things, codified the right to legal abortion for the first time ever. So we believe that we are safe, but I also, you know, we are safe in an event that we understand, which is that if Roe v. Wade were to be overturned, what the nation looked like prior to Roe v. Wade was that the right to abortion was determined state by state. So if we consider it from that point of view, we believe that in Oregon, we would still have the right to legal abortion. Another scenario, though, kind of a worst-case scenario, would be that the Supreme Court could pass a ban on abortion. And if they did, in that case, if they criminalized abortion and passed a ban, our state statute would not protect women in Oregon and their right to a legal abortion. So it's important, I think, that listeners know and that our constituents know that we can never just kind of rest on our laurels and say, we're fine here in Oregon, but that we really are sort of preparing for every possible scenario that could happen under the Supreme Court.
It's been demonstrated a few times in history that the Supreme Court is not unaware of the fact that there are angry people with feelings in both directions, outside of its walls. And, I mean, do you think it actually could get to a point where abortion is banned in the country?
I think anything is possible in today's political landscape. And I also think that we have, I mean, I can't think of another Supreme Court decision that passed 45 years ago that people are still debating, and that every time there is an election or every time there is a Supreme Court nomination, one of the big issues that comes up is whether or not Roe v. Wade would stand. And so I know that the issue of abortion is one of the most hotly contested in our country. I know that there are people who have built their political careers on saying that they want to see abortion banned and Roe v. Wade overturned and gutted. And so, again, I think when people, you know, can say that plainly, I think that we need to take that threat really seriously. And we, you know, here in Oregon, again, we see, even in the most pro-choice state of the nation, we see those threats all the time. We see them in the legislature. We see them in potential ballot measures. And we often don't see those things, you know, kind of get to come to the floor for a vote or, you know, get to the ballot because we have such pro-choice leadership. But it doesn't mean that there's not constant attempts. And the worry is that at some point, one of those may be able to succeed.
Let's talk about those ballot measures, because petitions were put in with a lot of signatures, more than 100,000, on July 6th for Initiative Petition 1, which has a very clear title, Stop Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act of 2018. So the odds of it getting to the ballot look pretty good at this point. What is the truth of what taxpayer funding does go to abortion in Oregon now?
Yeah, so we have had a state Medicaid plan, the Oregon Health Plan, that has included abortion as covered as a medical service since the 1970s. So taxpayer funding pays for the Oregon Health Plan and includes abortion care just like any other reproductive health care service. The other thing, though, that this ballot measure would do is that it would prohibit state funding for abortion care and would impact state employees who are covered by state-funded health plans. So that would be a big change for state employees who rely on their health plans to cover abortion services. It would also, I think it's important to note, not just ban that funding, but amend the Constitution to actually prohibit that funding. So if this passed, this would not only have a huge impact on women who needed abortion care, but would be a very, very hard thing for us to undo, and would potentially set a precedent where voters were then cherry picking the services that our state healthcare could fund, which I think is incredibly dangerous, no matter how one feels about abortion.
What is the figure? Do we have a dollar figure on how much public money goes to abortions in Oregon in a year?
We don't. We are still working with the state on getting those financial estimates.
And I know it was at $400 to $600 for any abortion, but that seems like a medical abortion. Is that right? Not a surgical abortion?
No, $400 to $600 is about the cost of a first trimester abortion. So that's an average cost here in Portland. I do think it's important to point out that because abortion services are currently mainly available in urban centers in Oregon, that there are a lot of women for whom they have additional cost of travel, of getting to, you know, places like Portland, hotels, things like that. So the cost can be much higher. And one of the things we also see is that for women who have a harder time getting the money together to get the abortion procedure or needing to travel to get there, they can often get pushed into, you know, 13, 14 weeks, and abortion does become more expensive at that point.
We have an email here from Heidi in Medford who writes, "No woman wants an abortion, but sometimes she needs one. These anti-abortion people only care about the unborn. Once the child is in this world, we call their mothers welfare queens. You cannot go to work with a baby on your hip. You can't live on minimum wage, much less raise a child. This is not a decision that old white men in Washington should make." That again from Heidi in Medford. Your thoughts, Grayson?
Well, I say, hear, hear, Heidi. I agree that what I think that she's talking about is just all of the systemic issues that impact a woman's ability to decide when and if to have a child. So women make decisions about becoming parents based on their education, based on where they're at in their professional life, based on their financial circumstances and their relationship and the number of kids they already have. I mean, I think it's compelling for most people to know that 60% of women who have abortions are already mothers. And we also know that being able to decide when and if to have a child is one of the largest determinants of women's economic opportunity. And so, issues, Heidi mentioned you can't go to work with a baby on your hip. Some other issues that NARAL Pro-Choice Oregon works on are issues like paid family medical leave, which is going to be our piece of priority legislation in 2019, making sure that families can take the time that they need after the birth of a child or when they have a sick family member or need to take care of themselves. So I really think it's important that when we are talking about this kind of so-called pro-life movement, that we're holding lawmakers who identify as pro-life accountable for all of the things that make it possible for families to thrive and succeed and for parents to welcome children into the world knowing that they have the opportunity to raise them in a healthy and a safe environment.
All right. Much more to come, obviously. Grayson Dempsey is the executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Oregon, girding for a potential ballot measure fight in the fall and, of course, the discussion in Washington about who will be the next justice on the Supreme Court. Grayson, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.